the wonderful San Miguel de Allende at the Casa Chiquita, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and here we're talking with James Guzman of Borderless Blog, right?
Yeah, Borderless Blog, Borderless Podcast.
And this is the Guadalajara Geopolitics Podcast. And we're here with James, who lives in San Miguel. And we wanted to get to know a little bit about his borderless philosophy, as well as talk about geopolitics and what people can do during geopolitical crises as ways to ride out the storms that are going on around the world. So, James, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? You were in the U.S. Navy. Right. You studied international business. You worked for Peter Schiff's Euro-Pacific Capital. And you ended up here in San Miguel. So just give us a quick bio.
Okay, yeah. That was pretty quick, and that was good. I mean, I was in the Navy. I went to Iraq. I was also part of Hurricane Katrina relief. While I was there, I was stationed on board a large ship. It was LHD, kind of a mini aircraft carrier. I was there for 4 years. After that, I went and I studied international business, like you said, in Madrid, Spain. And at that time, the only thing I wanted to do was study with Peter Schiff. He really influenced my ideas on economics and things like that at the time. So I just badgered him for a job. I went to the office, Euro-Pacific Capital in New York. I went to the one in Santa Monica. I called into his radio show, did everything I could, and then finally they offered me to be one of the first brokers at Euro-Pacific Bank. So I immediately moved out there to Barbados. I was one of the first brokers out there. And then I was there for a while, but decided that I kind of liked the Latin culture and that kind of thing. It was more for me, and I wanted to branch out a little bit. So I was offered an opportunity in Mexico and came here about 5 years ago. So, I've been working in different real estate fields. I was selling condos in Acapulco. Then I worked for Coldwell Banker here for a while, and now I'm just on my own. So that's it, basically.
And, well, the theme of my podcast is geopolitics in general, and I really like what you're doing because we have some things in common because I'm already living a borderless lifestyle.
Yeah.
We had a similar upbringing. You come from a Puerto Rican-American background.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from a Croatian-American background. And basically, just I'd like to know, what's your take on the current crisis geopolitically in the world? And maybe we can talk more economically, like... what are some problems you see currently in international affairs?
Yeah. Okay, well, I mean, about the crisis, I actually think that, it could be, you can look at it a variety of different ways, and it depends on what exact crisis that you're talking about, but I think maybe the overarching crisis of all the things going on right now is probably the indebtedness, right, of the governments, mostly the Western world. And, also, I think that information technology is kind of exposing, a lot of the old ways of doing, politics, manipulating people and stuff like that. That it's not as easy as it was in the past because we were able to communicate and through social networks and stuff like that. So, I think that actually what we're seeing is just a breakdown of the structure of the industrial age. You know, we're moving into the information age. And we're not sure what exactly it's going to look like at the other end of this. But, people are learning how to move their money around, move themselves around. Travel is cheaper than ever. Having location-independent income is easier than ever. The national borders don't mean what they used to mean. And so we're having to rethink all these different types of things. So I think that this crisis is probably actually a positive thing. Until we reach whatever the structure we're going to see, it's going to be very volatile and very strange times. So.
And what could you say was something that kind of woke you up to the way things are really working? You know, could it be the Austrian school that you studied?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I think that, that's a good question. I think it was probably a variety of different things. Probably, what has shaped me more than anything to have my own thoughts about this type of stuff is just my love for reading and wisdom and like looking at these things myself and trying to form my own opinion. So, I think there probably was a variety of books, that brought me to that conclusion about what I was just saying about this crisis actually being a change in you know, an age or whatever. There was a book called The Sovereign Individual that I read that that really changed how I looked at all that. So I think that that was a very definitely influential book. Yeah, and just a lot of things. You know, I think that all the information on the internet, the availability of it, it's I don't know that I want to point to one specific thing, but just that in general, you know, like I said, that's what's changing us being able to communicate with each other, and also what is given us all this information at our disposal to use.
And you've got a list of books on borderless I've seen. That,
oh, yeah.
And some of them are really interesting. Is the Harry Brown, right?
Yeah.
What was that book?
He's got two that I would definitely recommend. Harry Brown has How to Live Free in an Unfree World and Fail-Safe Investing. And they both are on completely different topics, but definitely recommend them both in leading a borderless lifestyle. I know that How to Live Free in an Unfree World has changed a lot of people's lives. So it's a quick read, and I would definitely recommend it.
So the point of this podcast was not so much to dissect the current geopolitical crises, but kind of focus on your expertise, which is, you know, how can people live in such times? And we don't have to go all the way to, you know, to the extremes of survivalist preppers. And it's just common sense things. And, you know, I don't know if many people know, but for example, if you go back, I found this interesting when I discovered it, in the Old Testament, in the book of Ecclesiastes, it actually says that people should invest in 7 or 8 geographical locations because you never know what's going to happen. So, you know, international diversification isn't something new. It goes,
I don't know how that would be so accessible back then. That seems strange. I have to take a look at that. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, we don't have to go to extremes because, you know, I've lived in 5 countries. I don't know how many you've traveled all over the world.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've lived in several. I don't know what you consider live. You know, if you've been there for a few months, then yeah, probably around there as well. Like that, I've lived in maybe 5 to 7.
And so this is not just something for preppers, because, for example, I grew up between the U.S. and Croatia, and we had a war there from 1990 till 1995, the biggest conflict since World War II. And so, again, you never know when a crisis is going to hit. You never know when your home is going to be, you know, bombed. Here in Mexico, in San Miguel, is pretty peaceful, but in other parts of Mexico, there you have trouble, as well as in the States, wherever you want.
Right.
So you need to be able to, you know, survive when there's a crisis, and to be able to go to other countries if you need to. So maybe you can just start us out giving us what would be a blueprint of things people should be thinking about when there's an economic crisis, or, you know, you talk about permanent tourists, the flags.
Yeah.
Well, what things would you start out with?
Okay, well, yeah, you know, you have this thing called PT theory I end up talking a lot about. I don't know that it's necessarily a strategy for avoiding economic crisis, although it can be used that way. It's more of a way of not being under the jurisdiction of only one government. It's a way of, you know, having, you know, so you have different flags. So, you know, one would be your citizenship. So, like, you have several different passports, and that's great. You know, you can get, you know, a bank account in several different countries. You can have a residency in a different country, and these types of things. And all it does is it allows you mobility in a way that, you know, just in case. So, you know, not everybody puts all their money in, you know, one asset class. So say, like, for instance, in, you know, real estate, and maybe some people do, but it's not a good idea to put all of your money in one asset class in one area. So it's another way of diversifying. It's diversifying yourself and your assets, and not only different asset classes, but also different jurisdictions and countries, you know. And so, like we were talking about earlier with your other passport, you know, it's going to be a lot easier for you if anything did happen, wherever you happen to be. Maybe you're visiting a country. Maybe it happened to be here in Mexico where you live. You know, you never know the things that can happen. And I think that a lot of people, you know, the problem is that they're very naive, you know. They, for some reason, they don't think that the things that they read in history books can happen wherever it is that they're living. All kinds of things can happen.
Yeah.
And they have happened hundreds of times in the past, whether it's, you know, economic problems, you know, power outages, problems with, food shortages, water, all these different types of things. It's not paranoid to think about those things and to have some options in case that does happen. So.
And you've experienced it in Acapulco.
Right.
People I know in Croatia when there was the war. And so, and Katrina, you said you were
right.
with the Navy in Katrina. So.
Right.
Actually, my sister, she married someone who was in the armed forces, and they had to live in a car for mm-hmm. a while because they were stationed in Katrina. So,
yeah.
And it's not only for what you're talking about is not only for crises, but as well as to get ahead if you have
right.
a business. So maybe if you can talk about that as well. Like, it's not just for crisis, but it's also to create opportunities as well.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. So, looking at different, especially from an investment standpoint, having more options, especially, undervalued markets and things like that, is great. And they have this strategy now. They call it geo arbitrage. I think that Tim Ferriss coined that term, but it's been something that's been used for a long time. And it's basically making money in a place that you can do on the internet through location independent businesses or income and stuff like that, and making money in a place that is expensive, so maybe New York or LA or Madrid or something like that, and then living in a place like San Miguel where it's nice, it's very comfortable, it's safe, but it's much cheaper to live. You're talking about when you compare it to a large city like that, maybe one-tenth, and you can live a great life and with the same exact income. So that's one way you can do it. And also just understanding trends. There's a lot of places that people don't want to look at as investment opportunities or whatever because it doesn't look good or something like that. But actually, those are the best deals. They have this saying that the time to buy is when there's blood in the streets,
mm-hmm.
right? The time you want to buy is when everybody else doesn't like it. So if they have like the brands of different countries is what they call them,
yeah.
What they are like in the public's eyes, like, oh, I would love to live in London or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and you can go live in London. You could try to buy some stocks in the New York Stock Exchange or the London Stock Exchange, but you're not going to make a lot of money. That's not where the good deals are. Half of the part of making money is buying.
Mm-hmm.
Is buying at a good price. So, being able to live in a cheap way and also buy investments and assets in a less expensive way. And also, in a lot of these countries, they're more accepting to people from, whatever country that you're coming from. They want you to come there. They need people that are productive, and they need people with money and educated people to help them with things. And they are going to offer you tax advantages. You're not going to be taxed at the same rate as you would in other, more Western countries. And it's not because you're taking advantage of them, and it's not because you're getting away with something.
Right.
It's because they want you to come, and they don't need all the money that, like, for instance, the U.S. government does to run these big, huge, bloated organizations and foreign policy and all this type of stuff. It's just not necessary. So, that's another big advantage.
Right. And if you have a location-independent business or an internet business, you basically don't have to pay taxes, because if your business is online, you're living in one country, and you live tax-free. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
In
some cases, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, you can, set up correctly. I think the point with that is that the tax laws were written
before
by people. Well, no, I mean, but they were by people that are making money. They have corporations. They have real estate, and so there are, they don't want to be taxed all the way to the hilt. The same that like the middle classes. People don't realize, the middle class is taxed all the hell, and it's set up that way, to get a job, getting regular income from a company or from the government, you're taxed higher than any other position that you're going to get, by getting passive income through whatever it is, and then also being able to incorporate in different countries and use these things, the same things that corporations use. All these laws are on the books. Again, this is not getting away with anything. This is actually the way that the tax law is written, because they want to incentivize people to come and do this. They want people to provide housing for real estate. They want people to come to their country and provide jobs. which is why they would, you know, have lower corporate taxes, you know, and things like that. So by just looking at the way that the tax law is written and just going along with it and acting the way that they actually you're going along with how they want it to be. So that's, I don't know. It's just using how it's been laid out.
And we were talking earlier about living in the States.
Yeah.
And that's a theme that I have on this podcast, and I speak to a lot of people, authors, experts. Over the weekend, I was just in Guanajuato, not too far from here, with Morris Berman, who's a lauded academic. He's written a trilogy of books, and has basically of why America failed.
Right.
And he lives here in Mexico.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. Yeah, check that out.
And basically, you know, it's not, we don't hate America. People get the wrong impression. You know, I love the U.S., but I don't want to live there. And I see, in a sense, it's had its day in the sun, and there's so many opportunities around the world. And you know, I don't ever see myself going back there. I asked Morris. He said he's never going to go back there. And a lot of the people that I talk to, they don't ever see themselves going back to the States. Do you see yourself ever going back to the States?
Well, number one, I'd like to preface it by saying that I actually do have hate for the United States government.
The government, not the people,
but certainly not the people.
The
no, absolutely not. And yeah, I think that there's a lot of people that you know, enjoy it there. That, you know, they have places that they've grown up and a job and things like that, and that's fine. And you know, if they enjoy it, then they can stay there. No, I moved out in 2008. I have gone back and visited a few times, and you know, there's a number of reasons. You know, maybe it's just my preferences, but no, I haven't enjoyed it any time that I've gone back. So,
and my point is really, you know, I travel there every year. I love visiting, but in terms of opportunity,
right,
is what I'm talking about.
Sure.
As well as you mentioned, the government. The government's getting bigger. It's mm-hmm. becoming more authoritarian. You know, I talk to some of these experts as well, and they say they kind of get jittery when they go back because it's getting more. The government's growing. It's getting more indebted, as you say, and that happens with governments around the world.
Right.
When they need more money, they get more. They turn the volume up.
Right.
And so that creates an environment for not a very conducive environment.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the grass is greener a bit in Mexico, you might say, especially for young folks like us, and there's so many opportunities. And I don't know, I mean, what would you describe here in Mexico, something great about living here?
Well, I like living here. I don't necessarily think that it's a great place to open like a brick and mortar business. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that I'm against it. I do know people that have started, that have come here to Mexico and opened brick and mortar businesses and have been successful. I think that if you can, you know, in this day and age, there is a group of people that if you have the knowledge, you can have a location independent business. You can have like an internet business, and that's the best thing that you can do within my lifetime. And so if you're able to do that, then that's the way that you want to go. You want to concentrate on making money by doing that, because you know you're not going to be you don't have a place that somebody can come
right.
and knock on the door, and you know, no matter who it is, and you try to get money for you or from you, or say that you can't do what you're doing, and stuff like that. And so I would definitely recommend people to do that. But you know, as far as living, I really enjoy it. I think that it's like I said, at least here in San Miguel de Allende, we have a very high standard of living at a low cost.
Yeah.
You know, it's not too big, it's not too small, and I'm sure that there's plenty of cities that I would be comfortable in all throughout the world.
Guadalajara.
See, I haven't been to visit, but I'll definitely go down to visit over there. And, you know, it's not for everybody. Everybody has different tastes and things like that, but for the moment, I'm enjoying it. So.
And what are some aspects of borderless that we might have missed that you might add your the borderless philosophy, which you talk about on the blog?
Yeah, so, you know, basically the tagline is traveling, investing, and living beyond borders. So it's not just about living in different countries internationally. You could stay in the same city that you'd like to. That's really beside the point. You know, investing is, you know, looking at, like I was saying, looking at different countries, looking at different types of asset classes or things like that. And, you know, the living part is that, you know, not all these, the borders are not necessarily, you know, monetary or actual, like, you know, national borders. But a lot of times, the biggest problem that people have are, you know, mental borders. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, you know, whether it's, you know, religious borders or cultural borders, or, you know, they're in a bad family situation, or bad relationship, or whatever it is. There's all different types of things that are kind of like programmed in us from a young age that hold us back from reaching our potential. And so I try to help people understand that, you know, there's all these tools out there. There's all, you know, it's easier than ever. All the information that's out there, it's easier than ever to travel and leave a place that you're not comfortable being in. So, you know, that's basically what that whole tagline is about, the borderless theme. All right, well, I want to ask you about you. So, like, you've been out there in Guadalajara for a while. I mean, how's that been? I mean, obviously, you what are the things that you really enjoy more than the United States?
Well, it's been half a decade there in Guadalajara.
Yeah, 5 years. Yeah.
I like to say half a decade instead of 5 years.
Sounds better, yeah.
Makes it seem like I've been there longer.
So about the same as I have been.
Yeah?
Okay.
In Mexico,
yeah.
No, but Guadalajara, what I like is, like you said, it's a lower cost of living.
Mm.
You have a lot more freedom than
right.
you might in the States, because the government is kind of incompetent.
Right.
Right? So you have more freedom. You don't have to look, you know, keep looking behind you.
Yeah.
And you just have a general freedom.
Yeah.
Low cost of living. People are very warm, as opposed to the general stereotype of Europe and the U.S., where people can tend to be superficial or cold. So, yeah, Mexico's treating me pretty well.
You like it, yeah.
Guadalajara. You know, there's some violence, right? But, you know, I've lived in 5 countries, like I said, and I've experienced violence in almost all of those countries.
Right.
So, you can't really escape.
Well, I mean, you must really like it because you went and got married, right? I mean,
I married a Mexican, bought a house in Mexico, so.
Are you serious?
Yeah, serious about, I'm planting my flag.
That's good.
Really planting the flag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. No, I mean, I like it too. You know, I haven't done any of that. You know, I still try to keep, you know, I did do that. So, yeah, I did that at one point in time when I was probably too young that I did buy the house. I had 2 houses, actually, and I got married and all that kind of stuff. So I haven't quite jumped into the deep end, quite, you know, again, quite as quickly. But, well, that's good that you enjoy it. And it's kind of funny, right, that, you know, we're both from the U.S. and we've found that living here is better for us. But, you know, it's funny that a lot of people that just think that still have some kind of idea that Mexico or Latin America in general is like a hellhole or something.
No,
like,
there's a lot of people I know
that they can't
stand it.
Yeah.
And they've come here for 2 days and they haven't even experienced Mexico and they already want to leave. And they just think, you know.
Like, is that right?
They think it's a hellhole. I know someone who's come and the first place they wanted to go was Costco. And they never tried real tacos.
Right.
And they just have this impression, like, Mexico is, you know, a hellhole.
Yeah. Well, that's funny, man. I never get that, at least here in San Miguel. When people from the States come down here, they're blown away. And I'll tell you, if more people would come, I mean, look, I don't need to push anything on anybody.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's all out there. You can look at what the stuff that I post, the pictures, and I'm very open to tell you if you want to know what it's like here, but I'm not here to push on. You don't want to come, then don't come. But I tell you what, man, if a lot of my friends that I grew up with in the States, sometimes I'm out here on the weekends, and if they knew what was going on, they would be down here in a second, man. It's just like, as far as the price and all the, you know, the great restaurants and clubs and all the girls looking really nice and very friendly and everybody's having a good time. A lot of my friends that, you know, just people don't know, like, you know, and whatever, that's fine. I mean, if everybody did, then it would be ruined, right? So
yeah.
it's funny. So.
And that's why, for example, near Guadalajara, an hour away or less in Chapala,
yeah,
is the biggest community of American expats anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
And San Miguel has a huge expat community as well.
Absolutely.
So.
And, you know, you talk about geopolitics and you look a lot at this, you know, this type of the economics and stuff like that. I think that, you know, all that is, really, if you want to look at it, it's like poor American immigrants that are escaping medical tyranny in the United States. You know, they have no way of surviving without coming down to the United States.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So Lake Chapala has, you know, I think their average age is like 75 or something.
Yeah.
So all these old people, and basically they've come to Mexico because otherwise they wouldn't be able to survive.
Yeah.
Because they need so much medical, you know, help and stuff like that. And this is just the beginning, folks. You know what I mean?
Also,
all this stuff, the prices in the United States for medical care is not going down anytime soon. It's going up.
Yeah.
All these people that are retiring now, the debt of the United States is absolutely unsustainable. The way that it's going is unsustainable. The only way that they can get out of it, which is what they're doing now, is printing more dollars and devaluating the dollar. So what does that mean? Yeah, okay, maybe you'll get your Social Security for the rest of your life, maybe. Best scenario. But even if it's just impossible for it to go with the same purchasing power that it has today forever. So, you know, you're just going to get a lower purchasing power.
Right.
So your dollars are going to buy less and less. The medical costs are going to go up and up. So you're going to see more people coming down here. And I don't think that it's going to last forever, honestly. I think that, you know, the United States government, they don't want all these dollars to just escape, you know, all the Social Security money to leave the United States and go to Mexico. So I think that probably, you know, like we're seeing with FACTA, if a lot of people don't know, you know, you have a lot of financial laws that are cutting United States citizens, United States people. You don't even have to be a citizen. You just have to be associated with an American that you can't bank anywhere. They're already doing that. You're going to have similar types of things with immigration. You know, you come down here to other countries and you'll be like some sort of a refugee. You can't get in. You can't open a bank. They don't want you. So, you know, yeah, people can continue with this idea that, you know, that you know, they're the best and the richest and all this type of stuff. And I would just encourage people to take a look around because it's not even true today. And it's not going to be true in a decade. So you got to prepare yourself correctly, you know what I mean? So that's what I mean, getting out there, being a more interesting person, first of all, is going and understanding different cultures, different countries, different people, being open, being a good person, you know, having financial interests in different countries, and taking advantage of the tools that are available because they're not going anywhere. And, you know, that's my recommendations, you know.
And that's part of the problem with the criticism that these Americans have of places like Mexico is they don't actually know anything about Mexico, yet they make these conclusive, you know, arguments.
Right.
So to understand geopolitics and then understand all of this, you really have to know the other culture before you make, you know, an assumption or come to a conclusion. So.
Yeah, well, you'd hope, you know, that someone would not just make some sort of a judgment, so they don't know what they're talking about, although, you know, most people do, so.
All right, well, James, do you have any final closing comments? I always ask my guests for words of wisdom for the young generation.
Yeah.
You're doing well here in San Miguel, and, you know, one of my criticisms is we don't always have to go by the book and do what, you know, go through the whole school routine and the textbook routine, and we have to think outside of the box. What are some of your words of wisdom, final closing thoughts?
Go to my blog, borderlessblog.com. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not kidding. No, but yeah, do go to borderlessblog.com, Borderless Podcast, and check that out. There's a lot of information on there for free, all kinds of books and stuff like that. But, you know, other than that, it's just, you know, break down that fear. You know what I mean? Whatever it is that you think that's holding you back, you know, it's resistance. You know, Stephen Pressfield wrote this book. It was called The War of Art. This is one thing, you know, if people are having trouble getting past any types of hurdles, you know, that are having trouble getting motivated in their life, you need to go up and read The War of Art tomorrow, okay? And that's what it is. It's resistance. Resistance comes in many forms. It could be nationalism, thinking that, oh, everybody everywhere else is horrible. I'm not going to be able to make it. Nobody makes money on the internet. Nobody can, you know, how would I ever get a visa? How would I ever do this? Oh, no. Yes, you can. You can, and you know you can. Deep down, you know you can. And the only thing that's holding you back is yourself. You know what I mean? And really, if you think about it, resistance, this type of self-negating attitude, is one of the most evil forces that are on the face of the planet today. And you got to get past it. You know what I mean? You get this one test, this one time that you're on this planet, and you get to do all you can. This is a huge Earth. There's lots of things to do. There's lots of good that you can do in the world, so go out and do it.
I thought it was the art of war, not the war of art.
No, well, he flipped it over. Yeah.
All right, well, then we're going to end it here. Hope this was useful. We're gonna grab a pizza here and watch the setting sun in San Miguel. Yeah. And you guys enjoy yourselves wherever you are.
Salud.